The 12th step is something else again. But the 11th step is the powerhouse of Alcoholics Anonymous. He gave me the analogy of the gift to a child. You know, we've all had experience with children. You know, if you give a kid a gift, like he's a year, year and a half, many, many times the child will mistake the wrapping for the gift. You remember? He takes off the wrapping paper, he plays with it, he takes the ribbon, he puts his mouth, he eats it. He thinks you gave him the paper. He don't know. You might as well buy him an old newspaper, throw it on the floor. He'll wrap it around, rip it up and all. But as he gets experience in receiving gifts, he knows, the kid, that the package is just the package and the gift is at the bottom of the package. And after a while, he doesn't want anything to do with the package. He throws that thing up in the air and he takes a dive right in there to grab and see what he's got. And that's so here. The package is here at the bottom at 11. When I first came around, I was in very bad shape physically. I looked like a Chinaman. My eyes were all closed, and I had a lot of, you know, complaints. They're all alcohol-related complaints. And as you know, the greatest detoxification center there is the liver. You give the liver a chance to work, and it detoxifies you. And I came around, and pretty soon I'm feeling better, and I'm getting detoxed. I didn't go to a hospital or anything. I didn't have them. Beginning to eat regularly, and extra regularly, and sleep, and all that good stuff, and I felt good. I felt good, and I said to my sponsor, "This is it. I feel good." He said, "This is not it, Professor." Then pretty soon, my incredibly trained, finally honed mind began to work, and I'm a guy, I do crossword puzzles. And I lived in New York, I did the New York Times crossword puzzle. I do it with a pen where everybody could see me. There you are. And one day I'm on a train and I had the Times, and I pulled out a pen, zoop. And I thought, holy shit, I got my brains back. Because I didn't have them back for a period of time. I told one guy, came to me with a law case, and I said, "I can't do this. I used to be able to do something like this, but I can't do it. This is too much for me." I gave it to somebody else. But there I was smart again. I said to my sponsor, "I got my brains back. The kid is back." He said, "That's not it, Professor." About a year and a half later, I got my first pigeon. What a pain in the ass this one was. My very first pigeon. He could not get it for beans. His father was a friend of mine. His father was a hot shot. His father was something wonderful. He was like the treasurer of IBM, something really big, I forget. And he sent me this moron son of his, and I was going to save his ass. And he was just, and I'm at lunch with my sponsor, and I said, "I got this dirty son of a bitch." He's so stupid. He can't get a day at a time. He won't go to the meetings. He won't. And my sponsor looked at me and said, "That's it." He said, "That's it." I said, "That's what?" He said, "For the first time since I know you, you're talking about somebody other than you." That's it. It's not the brains. It's not the physical. Now you're doing it. That's it. I said, "Holy smokes, you know." I didn't think it was it. I thought it was a pain in my, you know. Now, let me tell you the rest of the story, and then we'll break for 5 minutes ago. This guy's father called me up. The guy got it. Ultimately got it, back with his wife, moved up to Connecticut, blah, blah, blah. The father called me up, and he said, "I'm sending you a check for $5,000. I said, "What for?" He said, "For the kid." "Oh," I said, no, Joe. "Joe, I can't take the dough." Oh, Jesus. Oh. Seven kids. I got three in prep school. "No, Joe, I can't." "No, thanks, Joe." "But no," he said, "you know, you really put a lot of time in with that kid. And she's his mother, and I are delighted. It's not much. You know, for him, it wasn't much. $5,000. I'll send it over." "Well," he said, "you get an envelope. Just do what you want with it. You don't like it, give it to a charity." I said, Joe, don't send the money, because I knew if he sent it, I'd grab it. So he said, all right. We hung up the phone. Holy shit, you know. For Christ's sake, what am I here? Philanthropic institution. I violated everything a lawyer holds dear. You know? I might as well have gone to a goddamn school of social services. 2 weeks later, he calls me up. Same guy. He said, Ray. He said, I have a brother. I said, oh, no. He said, last night, my brother shot a pistol out his window, drunk, and hit a passing car, and he got arrested. Do you take cases like that? I said, I certainly do. He said, how much? I said, $5,000. There is a God. So we break now. Thank you. Now, that 11th step is a discussion, really, of communication. That's what it is. It's communication with a power greater than our own God, as you understand him, or just plain old God. And the book says to us, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. And I certainly would consider this weekend that coming a great event that's come to pass for me, and I hope for others. All of this is covered in my 6-volume work, Humility and Beyond. Now, this 12th step, I am comforted to know that when I say this is the 12th step, that next year, at this weekend, someone will be here who will begin again with the first step. So the 12th step is not the end of anything. It's really just the prologue to the first step. And AA is pictured, we picture it as a circle with a triangle in it. And I find it such to be as an unending circle. And the 12th step says that all of these men and women who founded this program and brought it to you and to me, it said they had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And they tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all their affairs. So that's all you get, is the spiritual awakening. That's it. It's the result. A lot of people read How It Works Fast and they say it's a result. It isn't a result. It's the result. You don't get anything else. I didn't get any taller. I'm still Irish. What I have claimed to have had is a spiritual awakening. Now, that's a term with which I was not familiar. I don't know that term. I know everything else, but I don't know that term. Now, I know what the words mean. I'm familiar with the English language, but as a term, I never had heard that. It was not part of my understanding. So I have looked up several definitions of it, and the best one, I think, is in the 12 and 12. It says this, and I always like AA definitions because we are so definitive. Here's how we start. Maybe there are as many definitions of spiritual awakening as there are people who have had them. See, each one is yours will be of a different variety than mine, but nevertheless, we still have the same thing. But certainly, each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. When a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set upon a path which tells him he's really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength which, in one way or another, he had hitherto denied himself. He finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually in some part he has made himself ready to receive it. And that's what the spiritual awakening is. Now, when the book Alcoholics Anonymous was published, and in it was a description of what happened to Bill, and how the room in the town's hospital had a light in it so intense he could not see the walls, and he was praying, and he was transformed, and all of that. Their little office in New York began to get letters from Coleman, Alabama, and places, small places along the way. And the letters all pretty much said the same thing. And they said, here we are in Coleman, Alabama, and we're meeting in the monastery, and there are four of us, and we meet every week, and the room has not lit up yet. Please advise us what we're doing wrong. Yeah? And the wind doesn't blow unless Father Hilary comes in and speaks to us. And so in the second edition of the book, they put in the appendix, which we have in the third edition too, the Appendix A. And the appendix makes a distinction between a spiritual experience, which is what Bill Wilson had in his room, and a spiritual awakening, which is what you get as the result of these steps. And the difference is, they quote James and they say it's of the educational variety, the spiritual awakening. You get it as you go from step to step, or in the educational context it would be from grade to grade. You're not educated in the first grade. You've got to go through the other grades. And this is true. You go from the first step through the 12th step, then. Now many people in AA said they've had a spiritual awakening before they got here. Well, that's nice. But that's not what this step is talking about. This step is talking about a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And basically, in the appendix, it says it is an alteration, a profound alteration, in our reaction to life. See, it's not the real trick is not how you act, it's how you react. For every action, there's a reaction. Mine was uniform. I reacted by drinking. In good days, you give me the good news, let's have a drink. You give me the bad news, God, I need a drink. You know, good days, I drank. Bad days, I drank. Happy times, I drank. Sad times, I drank. My reaction was very predictable. I reacted that way, and it caused all of the problems that I had. This is a difficult concept to carry. You know, it says carry this message. Well, this is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the message. That there will be an awakening of the spirit, and it's the only message. And it's difficult to carry this message because in my experience and in my own case, he said to me, you're going to have a spiritual awakening. I said, I don't need one of those. I said, I need money. That's what I need. I'm broke. I need some dough. He said, well, later. And I think that's true now. It's a difficult message to carry. But I hear people constantly carrying the wrong message. I hear people telling newcomers that they're going to get their jobs back, they're going to get their wife back, they're going to get money, they're going to get cars. How the hell do you know that? How do you know that? That's not my experience. I don't know how you wouldn't. How do people know these things? And our book is very clear. It says, wife or no wife, job or no job, let no man say. Don't let him say it, that he will not become sober till his family comes back. Because the family has come back and he got drunk. And the family has never come back and he got sober. It says, don't let him say it. And my sponsor would not let me say it. I was never allowed to ask for anything except for the knowledge of God's will for me. I was not allowed to ask for a good job. I was not allowed to ask for a good relationship. I was not allowed to ask for anything that I really needed by that rotten bastard. But he just kept my nose in. Now, sometimes it's tough. But nevertheless, if you and I are to contribute to the succession of this program into the future, it is incumbent upon us, no one else is going to do it, to keep it the way it is. That's the idea. Pass it on the way you got it. And I got it in a very pure form. I got it that you're going to have a waking of the spirit, and that's it. You're not going to have anything else. Anything else you get is going to be just a bonus, and somebody, God, maybe feel sorry for you and throw you a house or something. Not for you, but maybe for your kids. And now sometimes this gets a little controversial, and I don't mind being controversial. It says, carry the message to alcoholics. That's what the step says. And this morning at the meditation, somebody read about our singleness of purpose. We are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, let me tell you something that should not be too difficult to figure out. And if I'm offending you, I apologize in advance, but I'm going to do it anyhow. And here it is. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. Is that difficult? I'll run it by you again. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. I have no message for non-alcoholics. The step says I carry this message to alcoholics. Now, we have in AA at the moment a lot of non-alcoholics. They come here. They come here basically, although it's in the wane, it's beginning to end. They're coming here from treatment centers. But treatment centers are on the dip. And here is the big lie that treatment centers promulgate. And it is a big lie, and they know it, but it's business. The big lie is this: one addiction is the same as another. This is not true. This is not true medically, it is not true chemically, and it certainly is not true in recovery. One addiction is not like the other. You go down to Coleman and get me 100 people, any 100, go to the supermarket, get me 100, any 100 at all, bring them into this room, give me an unlimited supply of cocaine, put them over there by Annabelle. Come back in a month. I will give you 100 cocaine addicts, every one of which will do anything I tell them to do in order to get their hands on this stuff. Go down to Coleman and get another 100, any 100 at all. Come up here, put an unlimited supply of booze against that wall. Come back in 30 days. I might have 8 alcoholics for you. 8, maybe 8. Perhaps 6. Those are the statistics. Because cocaine causes cocaine addiction. Alcohol does not cause alcoholism. I told you last night the great Jelinek tried to make himself an alcoholic. Fell on his ass, hit his head, grabbed in his pants. He couldn't make himself an alcoholic. He's not one. He isn't one. And he'll never be one. Now, this is not a new problem. This problem, I'm talking like it's a new problem. It's not a new problem. In 1958, you see this pamphlet? This pamphlet was written by Bill Wilson, originally as an article in the Grapevine. In 1958, the black part over here. See? Now, here's what he says in 1958. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and they have always, always failed. It has been learned that there is no possible way to make non-alcoholics into AA members. We have to confine our membership to alcoholics. We have to confine our AA groups to a single purpose. If we don't stick to these principles, we shall almost surely collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. Now, I'm not knocking down. I'm not knocking cocaine addicts, heroin addicts, gay overeating cross-dressers. I'm not knocking any of these people. I have great empathy for among my other accomplishments, I do a lot of work with cocaine lawyers. I've authored 2 articles on the cocaine lawyer. I'm chairman of the board of international lawyers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the primary purpose among lawyers these days is not alcohol, it's cocaine. And I do a lot of work with them, although I've never had cocaine. But I do a lot of work in court for them. I appear in court. I'm an expert. I testify. And so I have great empathy for them. And I know what our book says. Our book says we are all inclusive, never exclusive. I'm not a member of the AA police. I don't care who comes here. My experience is the non-alcoholics don't stay that long. It's boring for them. Because all they have to do is stop using the cocaine and get away from that lifestyle. If they go back to the lifestyle, they're dead ducks. If they get in that fast lane with the hips licking the cool, they're back into cocaine in just a matter of days. But if they stay away from that and they don't use, they're going to be fine. Now, see, they want to come to AA. I'll tell you, you know why they want to come to AA? I'll tell you why. It's very simple. The hospital only has one van. See? Old farting hills out there in Nebraska, they got one van. They don't have a fleet of buses. Cocaine Anonymous leaves at 9, and heroin at 9, 10. They got one van. And they drive them to the AA meeting because that works. And they don't drive them to the cocaine meeting because that's where you buy cocaine. You want to hit a heroin where I live, just go to the Narcotics Anonymous meeting out in the parking lot. That's where you can get a hit. That's where they sell it. No, it's just the truth. Now, in case this is too much for you, we have this. This is this light. same title, Problems Other Than Alcohol. This is excerpts, published by A. Conference approved. I'm going to ask you some questions. I wish you would answer them. Can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? What?
No.
Right, no. God damn it, no. No. Doesn't mean we don't love them. Doesn't mean we don't wish them well. Doesn't mean we don't hope they get help. But they cannot become AA members. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. You have to be hard-assed about it. That's it. I tell them, you're in the wrong place, Charlie. You can come as long as you want, but you're in the wrong place. Can such a person be brought as a visitor to an open AA meeting for help and inspiration?
Yes.
Of course. If so, should these non-alcoholic pill or drug users be led to believe they have become AA members?
No.
Can a pill or drug taker who also has a genuine alcoholic history become a member of AA?
Yes.
Anders. I'm an alcoholic and addict. I'm an alcoholic and a. What they really should say is I'm an alcoholic and a. Now, this is simply a ego problem. That's all that is. That's an ego problem. See, they say, the Anders say, you're an alcoholic? Well, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. What do you think of that? I raise you one. And that means they're saying to me that they have suffered in some peculiar way that I, poor Rummy, will never understand. You know, you're an alcoholic? Well, let me tell you what I am. I'm an alcoholic and an addict and a gay overeating cross-dresser. What do you think? And when you start in with these people, as I oftentimes do, they want to weasel out by trying to take our third tradition and stick it up our nose. Correct? Have you had that experience? I have a desire to stop drinking. I will now read for you the long form of the third tradition. Ready? Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover from alcoholism. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group. provided as a group that they have no other affiliation. Huh? Cocaine, heroin, overeating, gambling. Time magazine, some time ago, had an article on all of this because it's very trendy, you know, these 12-step programs. More so a few years ago than now. And they said in Time magazine, there's an 800 number in New York City. You call the 800 number, you tell them what you want, and you call up the 800 number, you say, I am sticking bananas up my ass, and I cannot stop. And they say, Church of the Heavenly Rest, 8 o'clock Tuesday night, bring your own banana, you know. Can you believe that? 500 organizations that are patterned after this? 500, including former owners of Edsel's, Anonymous. These people are so embarrassed they used to own an Edsel. Edsel owners, that's true, I read. Brothers-in-law, Anonymous. Guys have trouble with their brothers-in-law. Mothers-in-law, Anonymous, you know. Non-Easter celebrants, Anonymous. These guys refuse to acknowledge Easter, you know. And they adopt our 12 steps. And then we're so dumb we let them do it. Because we are hoisted by our own petard, as the great divine says to me once in a while. Because we are bound by love and by tolerance. To be loving and tolerate. Well, tolerate is one thing. I tolerate, but for a period of time, not forever. And I tolerate by telling them the truth. And here's the truth. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. Now, it's not going to hurt these other people. It won't hurt anybody. In fact, I suppose the whole world could benefit from alcoholics, I suppose. But in so doing, it would destroy the singleness of purpose. And that's what we're here for. Why this is so? I don't know. Why God chose alcoholics to receive this program rather than these other people, I don't know. Perhaps it is because I speculate and say perhaps it is because these are just physical addictions. And the remedy, these people don't need a spiritual awakening. A spiritual awakening is not going to hurt them, but they don't need that. They just need to get off the drug they're on and stay away from that lifestyle. They don't need to be spiritually awakened. With us, it's just the opposite. The alcohol is what keeps us together. Without the alcohol, we'd all be jumping out of windows. And our book says we have a sufficient substitute for that, and the substitute is nothing less than the power of God. See? So maybe, well, I know. God didn't send them a spiritual awakening because they don't need it. Now, the 12 steps says we carry the message to alcoholics, and I carry the message. That's it. I'm not a social worker. I'm not a bank. I'm not an airline bureau or bus bureau. I carry the message, not the alcoholic. I carry the message to the alcoholic. Oh, I've done all the other stuff over the years, but this is what I do. This is the message I carry. This is the message I carry. Because that's the message he brought to me. I would whine to him, oh God, I was just like all of us, I was a terrible whiner. And he'd give me that stare, and I'd say, well, how about this? And he'd say, more spiritual development. I'd say, oh, well, what I'm talking about, John, is I really need a better job. You know, he said, I heard you, more spiritual development. I said, well, how will I develop spiritually? He said, why don't you grab that mop over there and start mopping this floor? I said, I'm an attorney. He said, so am I. Mop the goddamn floor. And then I'd end up mopping the floor. I said, John, you know, I got to have more money. I'm not making it here. I'm getting behind all the time. It makes me act badly. What do you think? He said, why don't you start making coffee for about 3 months? I said, John, what the hell has making coffee got to do with my getting money. I mean, where is the connection here? He said, I don't know. Well, I made the coffee for 2 years and I have a hell of a lot of money. And I knew that to be true. He's a partner in a big Wall Street law firm. And, you know, what are you going to do with a guy like that? There's no, you know, so there I am pouring a coffee into the pot. Hey, Lord, you know, keep an eye on me. I'm making a coffee. Yo, yeah. Begrudgingly and everything else. And, of course, everything worked out just the way it is. You know, this business of carrying this message, the book tells us no other activity will so ensure our own sobriety as this. Correct? It's the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you and I have to keep this the way it is. That's our obligation. Don't let anybody else take over this thing. You know? In Comes of Age, back in the St. Louis Convention, the first convention, and Father Dowling, the Jesuit that Bill counted as his spiritual advisor, spiritual responsibility used to refer to him, Dowling said this thing, I was speaking of Alcoholics Anonymous, he was not a member. He said, this thing is so good. It's so good, he says, that evil will attack it. And things will conspire against it, and people will try to ruin it. And he even posited Satan. That's beyond my knowledge. And it's true. Other movements such as our own have disappeared into the mist of history. The Washingtonians are gone. All of these kind of non-temperance movements are gone. And that's why we have our traditions, to keep us from being destroyed from without and from within. And the without is this attack. Now, I'm happy to say that the treatment centers are on the way out. The ones I've been dealing with, my experience, the last one allowed 4 days of detox. Hospital plant, 4 days of detoxification. And that's it. The 28 days is forever, is gone. For most of the insurance companies, is that right, Marshall? Marshall's in the insurance business. 28 days, they're not stupid. 28 days happened to be what the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan was in the 50s, that's all. And they tacked it on to us. You don't need 28 days. Now they give 4 days, 5 days detox. You're up and you're out. Now then it's our obligation, it's my obligation, to be once again a sponsor. We got to be sponsors like the old days, ladies. Not drop some dope off at some dump. You know, you bring Willie to Farting Hills and drop him. And come back and get him. I'm like, well, I'll do a little 12-step to work. I said, bullshit. A taxi could do it better than you. You know? And we're back to it now. Now, I don't want to upset you or anything else. Now, the last part says, we practice principles in all our affairs. What an order. I can't go through with it. Or somebody else once said when reading that, what? An order? I won't go through with it. Well, I have heard the good abbot say many times that he and I have heard many times people who come here from good Christian homes, and he says he no longer considers that a desirable place to raise children. And I've heard a million times, and so have you. Thank you. People say they were born in good Christian homes, and they were raised with principle, and they got into demon rum and lower companions, and they eroded all of these principles that their parents had given them and their church had given them. And they had sunk to the lowest of levels. And then they had come into the sunlight of Alcoholics Anonymous and recovered all their old principles and gone on to glory. I've heard it 100 million times, and that's very nice. It's just not my case. I never had any principles to start with. I had expediency and need, you know? When my mother said to my brother and I, go get milk, she meant go get milk. She did not necessarily mean go buy milk. If she had it, we bought milk. If she didn't have it, we got milk. And anything else she needed. We were very good at that, my brother and I. We were very fast on our feet. And I was raised that way. I was raised with neighborhood bullshit. You know what I mean? Don't get mad, get even. If you're tough enough, you can get what you want. If you stay tough, keep what you got. Don't give them an even break, that kind of stuff. And I believed it. I bought into it. And for a period of time, it worked. My defects of character, my self-centeredness, my selfishness, my ambition. He said to me, you can put down a few assets in your inventory. I put ambition. He put greed. Big letters like that, greed, bastard. But all of that stuff, you know, it propelled me. It got me out of this Irish ghetto I was in. It got me into very good schools. It got me out of very good schools. It got me into very good jobs, very good positions, very good homes, very good location, everything. Great opportunities. I blew them all, but it got me into these things. But you see, it ran out. It ran out. Self-propulsion runs out. I ran out of everything. I ran out of ambition. I ran out of nerve. I ran out of money. I ran out of friends. I just ran out of it. And I had no principles. I had none to fall back on. And I came around here. Well, you can't come around here and stay very long. I mean, within the first few minutes, I suppose. They're forever talking about honesty and open-mindedness and willingness. God, that's the first week you hear that stuff. Principles. I used to wait for people to come to my office and they would say, I have a matter of great principle. Oh, thank God. I'll take him every goddamn dime he's got. A matter of principle? We're going to the Supreme Court of the United States with this, Charlie. He said, well, it's only a traffic. Makes no difference. So we're going. Give me $5,000. Matter of principle. Summon the work. Get the rest of the staff in here. This man has a matter of principle. You know? And the poor guy said, how would you? I used to wait for guys. I love guys with principles. And take them to the cleaners. Because people with principle think you have principle. They're gone. Now, you can't live like that around here, can you? And he kept saying to me, we don't do that. We don't? No. I said, well, it's right. No, we can't do that. Well, it's only a little push. Yeah, I know, but you overreached. Give him back some of it. Give it back? You know, somebody just put a knife on my heart. Give it back. He'd say, give it back. You took too much. I gouge people on peace. Oh. Imagine if your lawyer came to you and said, here's some money back. I would lie. I said, the secretary made a mistake about that number. It's the wrong number here. Here's some. Or I'd say, John, you know, John, the lawyer, he said, give it to him. So, and I learned a little bit. You know, I should go along. You can't help but develop that kind of rudimentary stuff here. I went to him, and he had all kinds of principles, my sponsor. My sponsors, God is my sponsor, understood him, came with a chasuble and a cope and Stations of the Cross and the Bishop of Rome and the whole thing. He's a daily communicant, and he attends church every day. And that was God as he understood him. And he is and was and is, still remains, so he's retired now. Man of great principle. He even looks like a man of great principle. And I thought maybe I could use some of his principles. I said, give me some of your principles, you know. He said, I'm using mine. You got to find your own, you know. Well, I began to stumble around here. I found a few. I'll discuss a couple of them with you. I found them in the book. You know, Jerry and I were talking last night. I'm very greedy. I'm high maintenance. I am very high maintenance. I require big cars, two homes, pools, clubs, you know, all that stuff. And in my dressing room, I have a dressing room, I have a thing on the wall that my sponsor gave me. You know what it says? It says, material progress always followed spiritual progress and never otherwise. And the never otherwise is underlined. That dirty bastard. Yeah? And I tell him, I always got to get some more dough. He'd say, more spiritual progress. More spiritual progress. I say, John, this is not a spiritual problem. You understand me? I committed to do this and this and this. I need $100,000. Yeah, he said, I understand. More spiritual progress. And he meant it. And you know what? He's absolutely right. And that's my experience. I don't know how it happened. The money used to just fly in through the window. There was one point in my life there, honest to God, my partners were saying, will you lay off? I mean, we had to hire two or three people in a month because I brought in so much. They said, lay off. Stop that running around, grabbing all this business. I couldn't handle all the dough. I'm going to retire this year, so I managed to get rid of most of it. You remember Bob, our founder, co-founder? When they had the first international convention, they assembled those people in Cleveland just so Bob could see them before he died. They knew he was going to die. He had the cancer. My friend Al Steckman drove him over from Akron to Cleveland. Al said he was in very bad shape. And he gave his last talk, and maybe you've heard it on the tapes. I've heard it. And he said that he had thought it all over from 1935 to 1950. And that he had distilled it down into love and to service. He said the whole thing is love and service. Those are the principles by which he lived, and I think that's pretty good. And I understand that. I understand that, and I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to do both of those things. And I consider what I'm doing here as service. Plus, it's a big ego booster. And I like it, and I meet women. I meet good-looking women, like yourself, my dear. Here's a principle that you can use. If I could master this principle, I would rule the world. You ready for this one? Mind your own business. If I could do that and keep my mouth shut, which is impossible, I would rule the world. Whatever, and he would be after me all the time. What are you doing? Well, I'm straightening him out. What are you talking about? Why the hell would you straighten him out? Because he's a moron. Well, who asked you to do that? Nobody. I think, please. He said, would you mind your own? Mind your own. And he'd stick words in there. Goddamn business. Mind your own business. Oh. I would like the attire committee. Some guy would show up in shorts and sandals. What the hell is that? What are you doing today, Mina? He said, what are you, the head lifeguard? For Christ's sake. It's hot in here. The guy came in with, it looks like he just came from the beach. It's all right. We're okay. He's got a bathing suit and a T-shirt. Oh, for Christ's sake, he looks like hell. This is the chairman of the attire committee, like the Reverend Divine back there. I'm talking over the Gulf Shores, and this one in the back of the room, I had, you know those band shirts when your hips looking cool? He gives me hell I don't have a tie. This guy doesn't wear a tie in the last 50 years. But I digress. Here's another principle. And there's a corollary of it. Here's the principle. It's very quick. It's God dependency. And the corollary of it is God reliance. See? It is my experience, and it is your experience, I dare say, that you have been let down, have you not, by people? Sure you have. In everyone's lives, they're let down by people. Isn't that true? Of course it's true. Whether they do it intentionally, whether they do it carelessly, but the result is you're let down. And even sadder to say, I've let people down. And I'm not talking about when I was drunk, I'm talking about now. Whether it's intentionally or carelessly, or I do the wrong thing, sometimes lets people down. And therefore, I've learned that my reliance upon people is tenuous. My dependence on people, you know, there's a chance there it's not going to work. My dependence on God has always worked. It has always worked. And I'm living proof of it. Look at me. I've been a member all these years. I'm eminently successful. I'm a happy camper. I like my life. I like what I do. I like where I live. I like with whom I live. I have 7 very successful children. Every one of them a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every single one is a member of AA. So I have no, you know, I know what I'm doing. And I have depended upon God. Because that's what my sponsor told me to do. And that's what our book tells me to do. I've come to the end now, and I have a way of ending. First thing I do is I read the last page here, which fits in with what I just said. And I'm sure you know this page as well as I do. I appreciate the fact that I know who you are. I know your members. I'm not telling you anything new, but it's good for me to hear it. Here's what it says. It says, still you may say, I will not have the benefit of those of you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So your real reliance must always be upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Didn't you crave a fellowship? True? Sure. What you're looking for, some God, isn't there somebody that knows what's happening to me? Isn't there somebody I can talk to about this? Isn't there one person in the world who can say, I know, Charlie, you're a slob and a drunk, but there's a way out of this. That's a fellow. Yes, yes. That's what it says. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. Isn't that terrible? God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. So ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do for the new man who suffers. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you do not have. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact, capital G, capital F, for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Join us, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. I am privileged to go around the country and do these things and do other things. And it's been going on for quite a while. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank you, Marsha, wherever she was, and Hillary for inviting me here. It's been such a pleasure to be here. And thank you all, because, you know, when you do this, you get a sense of people, whether they're listening or not listening. And it's been a pleasure to be with you. I have a way of ending that has become something of a signature with me, if you've ever heard me in conventions and stuff. And I refer to a pamphlet we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, a pamphlet that is very dear to me, and it's called A Member's Eye View. And I think it's our best written pamphlet, certainly our most literate pamphlet. And the author, at the very last page, takes a biblical reference. And he recalls the time when John the Baptist was once again languishing in one of Herod's prisons, and John sent 2 of his friends to inquire of his cousin Jesus as to whether or not he was the Messiah. And these 2 men found him, and they walked with him a while, and one day they stopped him and they said to him, are you the Messiah? Are you the one we've been waiting for all these years, or should we just go on waiting? And he never answered that question. But he said to these 2 men, go back to John and tell John only what you have seen and only what you have heard. Tell John that the blind see and the lame walk. And tell John that the deaf can hear and that the sick are made well. And tell John that the poor have the gospel brought to them. In my early training, I was told that the word poor in that context could mean poor in spirit. And everybody knows that the word gospel simply means good news. And so, my dear sisters and brothers, in happy retreat assembled in Cultman, Alabama, if you will accept a report from me based on my years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you only what I have seen and only what I have heard. And based on that personal observation, it seems to me that the blind do see and the lame, they walk. And I know that the deaf can hear. And most certainly, the sick are made well. And I have seen over and over and over again, through the longest day and into the darkest night, the good news of this program brought to the alcoholic who suffers, the poor in spirit. Thank you very much.